On the show today, the soundtracks of our lives. So we've talked a lot about music, but really, almost all the time, what we hear are voices. Like me, on my way to the studio.
Welcome to NYC Now.
I've got my earbuds in.
Your source for local news in and
I've got my dog with me.
Okay, let's cross. Let's cross. Quick, quick, quick.
On the way, I'll stop for coffee.
She's spoiled.
All right, little one. Thank you so much, AJ.
Listen to the busy street.
Morning.
But by the time I sit down to my microphone, I'm often reminded that the voice I hear the most.
Okay.
Is my own.
Let's just start by having you.
Most of us use our voice on a daily basis, but have no idea how it works. And even scientists who've been researching it for a long time, there's still a lot of mystery.
This is Rebecca Kleinberger. She is a professor of humanics and voice technology at Northeastern University. And much of her research focuses on the relationship we have to our own voice, what it sounds like to us, and how we think it comes across to others.
All of us have some sort of relationship with our voice. And although it's extremely familiar, we're also very much estranged from our own voice.
But our voice is with us constantly. How do you see it?
Well, you can kind of think about the voice as a gift you give to others. Your voice is not meant for you to listen to it. There's a lot of different rhythm within our own body. The rhythm of how we walk. The rhythm of our own heartbeat. And our own breathing. And similarly as the voice, all of that are some of the tempos in our lives. They are metronomes of our lives. But we are not conscious of them. So you could think of your voice as part of the background ambient music of your life.
Rebecca calls the voice we hear in our heads the inward voice. And she says there are mechanisms that explain why we hear that voice as a quieter, filtered version of the outward voice we project onto the world.
Why is it that we're so unfamiliar with it? Why is it that it's not the voice that we hear?
Here's Rebecca Kleinberger on the TED stage.
So let's think about it. Let's try to understand the mechanism of perception of this inward voice. Because your body has many ways of filtering it differently from the outward voice. So to perceive this voice, it first has to travel to your ears. And your outward voice travels through the air, while your inward voice travels through your bones. This is called bone conduction. And because of this, your inward voice is going to sound in a lower register and also more musically harmonic than your outward voice. Once it travels there, it has to access your inner ear. And there's a second mechanism taking place here. It's a mechanical filter. It's a little partition that comes and protects your inner ear each time you produce a sound.
So when you do open your mouth, you also dampen a little bit the sound that's going to enter from your ear. We know that, interestingly, from studies of frogs. Some of those frogs are extremely loud, so loud that really at the source of them, they should almost be deafened by their own sound. And researchers realize that when those frogs make those sounds, there is almost a little wall that comes and protects their inner ear. And they wonder if other species have that. And yes, a lot of species actually have that, even humans.
So that also reduces what you hear. And then there is a third filter. It's a biological filter. Your cochlea, the part of your inner ear that processes the sound, is made out of living cells. And those living cells are going to trigger differently according to how often they hear the sound. It's an habituation effect.
Those are, living cells, so they align in a way that correspond to different frequencies. And all have slightly different thresholds in which they fire. And this threshold changes with how much we hear a certain sound, which means that your cell are just not going to fire as much after a while if you hear one sound a lot. And because your voice is the sound you hear the most in your own life, we could almost simplify this thinking that you have an imprint of your own voice inside your own inner ear that makes those cells fire less. So you hear your voice even less because of that.
Is it literally reducing the volume of what we hear, or just tuning it out?
tuning it out. It's a question of sensitivity.
Finally, we have a fourth filter. It's a neurological filter. Neurologists found out recently that when you open your mouth to create a sound, your own auditory cortex shuts down. So you hear your voice, but your brain actually never listens to the sound of your voice.
When you hear sounds in general, whether it is voices of other people or sound in your environment, your brain takes a signal and do a lot of different kind of analysis very quickly to kind of understand where it comes from, whether there's a danger, how you should understand your interaction and the intent of the people you're talking to. But when it's your own voice, your brain does not process it the same way. Your auditory cortex is actually barely active or way less active when you hear your own voice. One of the main theory is, well, your brain does not need to spend that much energy when it's your own voice because it's self-produced.
So that was how we hear our own voice. But how do other people hear us? When we come back, more with researcher Rebecca Kleinberger and the surprising things that people can glean from the sound of our voice. Today on the show, the soundtracks of our lives. You're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and we'll be right back. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, the soundtracks of our lives. And we were just talking to voice researcher Rebecca Kleinberger about the various filters that our brain uses to tune out our own voice so that we're not distracted by it. But what about when you hear your own voice played back to you? Why do so many of us hate the sound of our own voice?
Can you do a video of me?
We don't hear it the same way other people do. We don't have the mechanism to analyze it. That's why it's so odd when we hear it recorded.
This is our first time driving through Monument Valley, and I've been waiting my entire life.
When I listen to a recording of my voice, it's always slightly awkward, I would say, to listen to my voice. At least it sounds quite differently to what I think I sound. And this is something that's quite universally reported.
I mean, it is interesting. Like, when I was growing up, you didn't hear your own voice often at all. I mean, it was very rare. I remember getting a tape recorder and recording my own voice and playing it back. And that was so disturbing almost. But now people are recording themselves all the time, videos and podcasts and leaving voice memos and playing them back. Do you think that people are hearing themselves differently or making peace with the sound of their own voice in ways that maybe they didn't 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
It's quite paradoxical because as a species or as the animals we are not supposed to be able to hear our voice, right? the recordings, the ability to dissociate, time and space in terms of the use of the voice is something that's very unnatural. And even though it's been around for a long time that we have those technology, and indeed it's being used more and more often, I believe that there's still a part of our brain that is not completely used to it. Our brain has developed over so many years to get to the point where it is, to have all those optimization of the voice. And so much of it happens at the subconscious level. When I hear someone else, completely subconsciously, I'm going to automatically analyze a lot of different elements beyond words. I'm going to get a sense of their age, their gender, their health, the physiology of their face, the shape of their nose.
The shape of their nose?
Absolutely. People are really good at giving a good estimate of nose shape just from hearing voices. And people are really good at detecting hormone levels from the voice. So all those elements beyond words mean when I talk to you, then I'm going to let a lot of things naturally go that gives you indication about who I am, about my body shape, about my health, about my hormonal identity, etc.
Your voice is also very linked to how you create relationship. You have a different voice for every person you talk to. If I take a little snippet of your voice and I analyze it, I can know whether you're talking to your mother, to your brother, your friend, or your boss. We can also use as a predictor the vocal posture. meaning how you decide to place your voice when you talk to someone. So there's a lot to learn from listening to voices.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm okay with listening to my own voice on the radio, but my daughter was making fun of me the other day of the voice that she says I use that's different when I'm on the radio versus, you know, yelling at them to get out the door because they're late for school. Obviously a different voice.
Yeah, and I think there are evolutionary reasons for that. Also the fact that we also have a performing voice. Right, as a teacher, I know that. I'm sure as a radio person, you're very familiar with this. And this is a voice of performance. It's a voice of how I present myself in the world. The word expression literally means a voice. It's pressing towards the outside. How we express ourselves, who we are in the world, is our voice, but is a specific voice that we reserve for the world and for who we want to be in the world. And sometimes when we're back into our more familiar environments, it can feel odd to suddenly meet that person again. Oh, is this me? Or is this me as a performer?
So many different identities, I guess, we take on, and our voice reflects that.
Yeah, it's a marker for fluid identity. I think it's a good way of thinking about it. So if we go back to this question, why don't we like the sound of our own voice? It's a performance aspect, the vulnerability aspect. And another way to think about it is that we actually secretly do.
Huh.
When we don't know that it's our voice, we actually like our voice quite a lot.
Uh-huh.
So there are studies in which people were listening to a lot of different voice samples, among which some of them were their own voice samples, but they were not really aware of which one they were or that their voice were kind of hidden in there.
Mm-hmm.
And systematically, people seem to score their own voice higher than other people's voice when they don't know it's their own. So if you didn't know it was your voice, you might actually think, oh yeah, that sounds great. That's a good voice. That's nice. I'm feeling very, very in line with this person. But once you know it's your own voice, you have this kind of cringe feeling of vulnerability, of realizing how much you reveal in your voice that maybe you wish you did not.
But what about people who struggle with the ability to control their voice? Rebecca has also been researching ways to help people who stutter.
What's really interesting with stuttering is that their inner voice does not stutter. When they think, they don't stutter. When they read silently, their voice does not stutter. So it's really a discrepancy in the outer voice, that last bit of control between preparing your action and the action coming out. So some of the ways to think about it is they're going to create sound and the brain thinks that there's too much difference between what they hear and what they intend to say. So instead of letting go of the flow of the voice, it just reboots itself. So if I say ah, and I hear ah, I'm like, that's fine. If I say ah, and suddenly I hear e or o, my brain is going to think something is odd. And subconsciously, I'm going to change my muscle position to try to go back to what I'm trying to say. And this reboot is what we think creates those time difference of blockages, repetition, or continuation of sound. But I would say people who stutter most often do not stutter when they sing. This difference between speech and music is quite fundamental in stuttering. And if we can trick the brain to make it think that it's singing when it's actually speaking, we could help people who stutter reduce their disfluencies.
Yeah, I wondered if you could tell me about Mumble Melody then, this project that you've been working on.
Yes, it's led to the Mumble Melody project and to several studies of musically modulated auditory feedback.
I've had speech therapy since...
It's fascinating because in the video you have of Mumble Melody, there's a woman who speaks and she is stuttering on certain words she's struggling with.
She specializes in... stuttering, so...
And then we hear her speak while she's wearing an earpiece that is putting, I guess you would say, a filter on her voice. Is that fair to say?
Exactly, a modulating filter.
The Notes app I use all the time because if I think of something, I'm going to forget it, so just write it down. Or, like, little things that I see that I want to look into later.
So she's hearing her voice in a different way in her own head, But what we hear when she speaks is a much more sort of fluent, relaxed way of talking, and she doesn't stumble at all.
The notes app I use all the time, because if I think of something, I'm going to forget it, so just write it down.
Yeah, or so like we believe that this is actually changing the brain pathway used in producing and perceiving the voice, and it has led to really great results in terms of fluencies. So we are really working on personalizing all the different parameters so that people can really make their own use of it.
I just thought of one other question about the voice. You said earlier that the brain has a way of filtering out our inner voice so that it doesn't distract us. Mm-hmm. But what about when we hum or sing or talk to ourselves aloud? I've always kind of wondered, why do we bother? We could just, you know, think it. We don't actually need to make the sound.
Yeah, and I think this is very interesting to understand and even to think, where does it come from? Mm. Because we have language, we have words, but what does a voice mean without those words? For example, when I read a text, I'm always reading it with a voice, whether it's my voice, someone else's voice. If you read an email that comes from a colleague, you might often read it with their voice in your head. And sometimes we can't even control it because our brain is constantly making those mental model of voices when it comes to inner sound. You can sometimes imagine an entire song or symphony, but my big central theory here is that we think silently, and that is only possible because you yourself have a voice.
Hmm.
So sound come before words. And I would say I spent the past 15 years studying the human voice, and my main realization or theory is that the voice beyond word is so much richer. We often think of the voice as a vehicle to transmit words, but I like to turn that around and say words are just an excuse to have vocal interaction. What we share with each other through the voice beyond the word is really so much more important, is we share who we are.
That was Rebecca Kleinberger. She is a professor of humanics and voice technology at Northeastern University. You can see her full talk at TED.com.